This is The Events That Made Me with Liz Taylor, party planning extraordinaire and founder of the Taylor Lynn Corporation. I met today's guest when I was organising a party originally for her husband. And today, you'll understand why, since then, we have become firm friends. Today's guest is one of television's best-loved personalities. She's probably the only person that we're all delighted to see first thing in the morning or over lunch. The one and only Loose Woman. And nope, this is not Cynthia Payne, listener. It's Ruth Langford. And today we're going to find out what inspires this dynamo, how she juggles her TV roles with a building a brand. So fasten your seatbelts and welcome the lady herself. Good morning, Ruth.
That's the first time you've called me a lady, Liz. Good morning. Lady Ruth. It's got a ring to it. It's got a ring to it, hasn't it?
There's Lady Ruth, actually, and Sir Eamon. It does actually have a ring to it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't hold your breath. Let's roll back a bit, because I want to know sort of what made you, what the brand is all about. There's a lot behind Ruth that we don't know. And I know that it goes back many, many years to a chance meeting in a pub in Cornwall, which sounds just about right for you. Anyway, go on, tell us what happened.
It does sound about right for me, doesn't it? I know it is one of those kind of slight Cinderella stories, really, because my dad was in the army. You know, we grew up in army life, travelled around with him, and eventually went to boarding school. And then when I was 16, nearly 17, came back to live at home. By then, my dad had come out of the army and they'd bought a house in a fishing village in Cornwall. So it was a massive change for me, as you can imagine, you know, kind of 16 years old, coming from London to this little village in Cornwall where I didn't know anybody. And I'd done quite badly in my exams, which might surprise you, Liz, because obviously you think I'm highly intelligent, but I did really badly in my exams.
You notice I ignored that comment.
Yeah, I know. I thought silence was deafening. But, you know, so I was a bit of a directionless teenager. I wasn't one of those teenagers that knew what I wanted to do. You know, I really admired those people. I was quite envious, actually, of people that said, oh, yes, I want to do this and I want to do that. You know, Eamon, for example, he knew when he was kind of 7, 8 years old that he wanted to be a journalist. I never had that feeling of wanting to be anything so desperately. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And my mum said to me, look, go and do a secretarial course, you know, get some shorthand and typing, is at least you could temp if you haven't got any work. Thanks for your faith in me, Mum. But it was a good idea, actually. So I did. So I was at college in Plymouth and doing my shorthand and typing. And we used to go to the village pub and I met this lovely lady called Pat Savage, who I've lost touch with, sadly. So, Pat, if you're listening, get in touch because I'd love to talk to you. And I don't know why she did. Maybe she saw something in me that I didn't see, but she said she worked at the local television station, which then was Westwood Television. So it's a long time ago. And she said, listen, why do you know, I'm going to set up a meeting for you with our head of personnel. It probably never happened now. Come and have a chat with him. So I did. And he was a very nice man. And we chatted and I told him that, you know, I was doing my shorthand and typing. He said, well, look, carry on with that because, you know, there are lots of secretarial jobs here that would suit if you get your shorthand and typing qualifications. So then after that, I used to ring him every week and say, hello, Crispin, it's Ruth Langsford here. Just wondered, you know, were there any jobs going? And he'd go, no, not at the moment, Ruth. How's the course? And I'd go, yeah, we're doing okay. Anyway, eventually I finished the course. I passed my shorthand and type. It was back the only thing I'd ever passed, actually, and I really enjoyed it. And I phoned him again and said, right, I've passed, you know, any jobs? He said, not at the moment, but keep, you know, we'll keep in touch. And I got a job in the local civic centre in the education department. And no disrespect to the people who worked there. They were all lovely to me, but they were all older women who'd been there many years. And I just thought, please God, this is not my career now, because I'm literally doing copy typing. So I'd go in the morning, clock in the morning, take a piece of work from the in tray, put it in the out tray, da-di-da, you know, clock off for lunch. We'd all have a cup of tea at 11 o'clock. Everyone had their own mug. And I was like, oh my God, I'm drowning. This can't be me. I knew I should have worked harder at school. Anyway, one day I got a call from Crispin at Westwood Television saying, we've got something, a job you might be interested in, transmission logist. I went, had no idea what it was, and thought, whatever it is, it's got to be better than this. And he obviously thinks I can do it. So I went, yes, absolutely, I'm interested. He said, well, come in, I've set up an interview for you. So I went along to this interview having no idea what I was applying for. I literally didn't know, but I thought, well, you know, it's got to be better than being this copy typist. And so I had an interview with a lovely man called David Sunderland. And actually, eventually, he's the man responsible for me being on TV. But it was in this big boardroom, and he was sitting there, and I came in, and he just kind of said, well, yes, look, I've looked at this. Crispin thinks you can do the job. So marvellous, you know. Go and have a look around. When could you start?
Did you know what a transmission...
No, I swear, not a baldy clue, Liz.
What is it? Because I don't know.
It's the transmission assistant, I suppose you could call it. So you sit, it's in the main control room, and you're responsible for all the timings for the continuity presenter. And because basically in local TV, you're running your local programmes around all the network things. So there's a lot of timings involved. You know, so you have to, you've got Coronation Street, and then you've got this and that, and then you have to fit in your local news, your local lunchtime programmes.
And how old were you when you took this job?
I was 19, so I had my 19th birthday, and I had this interview with him, and they said, anyway, we're going to show you around, off you go. And anyway, I was walking around the building, and then they opened the door to the control room. So it's the transmission control room. So the whole transmission of the station came from this transmission suite. And I swear to God, I thought, oh my God, I've landed. This is where I want to be. It was so exciting. It felt like the Starship Enterprise. You know, there were monitors everywhere. The lights were low. I could hear the programs, and then people going, stand by, Telecine, coming to you in 5, 4. Yes, we're on 5. And I felt excited. My heart started to race. I was like, wow, I love it in here. But sadly, at that point, that bit wasn't my full-time job. So I was a transmission assistant in the office to start with, but at lunchtime. So we used to type up all the daily running schedules, that kind of thing. Hence where my typing skills came to the fore. But every lunchtime, we used to go down for an hour and cover the transmission assistant's lunch break. And I made it very clear to everybody that when the next job came up for a full time in the control room transmission assistant, I wanted it. And that's what happened. So I was very happy. I loved the job. And I worked alongside the continuity presenters. We had a glass panel, and then they had their continuity studio. And it was just them and a microphone, and I would give them all their timings, you know, and say, right, you've got 10 seconds into Coronation Street or 15 seconds into the news. And that was my job. So I kind of saw how it all worked.
Well, that's what I was just going to say to you. I suppose on reflection, I mean, you know, we might all sort of laugh now at how you started from in a typing pool. But what it has given you is the understanding of how it all ticks behind the scenes. And that's got to have been of benefit to you and co-presenters. How long
Completely.
Did you have that? How long did you have that job for?
Quite a while. And I can't remember. I'm so bad with ages and dates. But the thing is, I loved that job. I had no aspirations, I can honestly tell you, to be on television at that point. And so I really loved the job. And I was looking ahead thinking, okay, when I've done with this job, where would I like to go next? Where would my progression be? And I wanted to be a floor manager. And so I used to go in and sit whenever they were doing studio show or the 6 o'clock news program. If I was off, I would ask the floor manager, could I come in and watch? And I would sit in the wings. And because I'm quite bossy, Liz, as you know, I thought, that's a job for me. You know, they go, right, quiet studio, please. Right, stand by, coming to you in 5, 4, 3. All that. I thought, well, that looks like me. And you have to be quite organized. You're organizing everybody else. So that was my kind of career projection in my eyes. And then one Friday afternoon, the boss, so this the man, if you go back, the man who interviewed me for David. My original job, David Sunderland, who's sadly no longer with us, David Sunderland, he was my boss. He was head of presentation. So he called me up and said, oh, Ruth, can you pop up for 5 minutes? And I took my notebook because I thought, you know, he'd probably ask me to do something. So I had my notepad shorthand at the ready. And went into his office and he said, listen, he said, we need to find a holiday relief continuity presenter. He said, because, you know, people, they always want a full-time job. So if they come in to cover holiday, then they always want a full-time job. And if we haven't got one, they go off and do something else somewhere else. He said, we kind of need somebody that would just do holiday relief. And I honestly thought he was going to say, could you take this down and put an advert for me in the Stage magazine or something? So I had my notepad pen poised. And I was going, yes. And he said, so I wondered if you fancied having a go. And you know those moments where you know you're the only one in the room, but you look around over your shoulder and go, sorry, me? And he went, yeah. And he was very, very cool about it. He wasn't overexcited. He went, yeah. I said, why me? He went, I don't know. He said, I thought you just might be quite good at it. I said, and I was very, didn't know what to say. And he said, look, he said, it's Friday afternoon. He said, have a think about it over the weekend. And if you're interested, I'll give you an audition. And I said, okay. Came out completely stunned. Didn't tell anybody. Went to the phone. We had a phone box within the building, this little phone booth, a pay phone where you put your money in. You won't remember that, kids, if you're listening. And I phoned home, right? So I didn't know who would answer, my mum or my dad. Phoned home, and it was my dad. And I said, Dad, guess what? They've asked me if I want to audition. You need to be a presenter. And he said, wow, that's amazing. I went, oh, Daddy, I don't know. I don't know if I could do that. He said, look, what have you got to lose? He said, you've got a job. I was staff. He said, you've got a job. He said, if you're rubbish, he said, it'll be a bit embarrassing for a day or two, but they'll forget it and you've still got a job. He said, but you might not be rubbish. You might be brilliant. He said, go for it, Rooty. He used to call me Rooty Tooty. He said, go for it, Rooty. And I said, do you know, Dad, I think I might. So, you know, so thank God for my dad, because he could have said, oh, I don't know. But he said, do it. So I went back on the Monday and said, yes, I'm interested. And they set up an audition for me. And I had to read a news bulletin. And in those days, there was no autocue. So you did everything from your, you know, papers. So it's a lot of looking up and down. Read a news bulletin. Do an advert. So we used to do a lot of adverts. You know, this Sunday at whatever it was, market.
I'm trying to think
of some of the places that were there. They used to have, oh yeah, Trago Mills this Sunday, half price, compost, paint, yard brooms, don't miss it. We used to do those live. We used to do them live. So you'd sit waiting for the commercial break and then you do it live. Yeah, so I had to read a news bulletin, do some adverts, and then they ask you to write a minute script and talk about yourself, which a minute doesn't sound very long, but you can say a lot in a minute. It's actually quite long in TV and radio terms, as you probably know. So I did that, and you know, the tape gets sent up to him, and the next day he called me up and said, yeah, he said, I'd like to offer you the job, which meant I stayed in my normal job as a transmission assistant, but then if somebody went on holiday, I moved across and became a continuity presenter, and one of the other transmission assistants became me. So that's how I started. And then the week that I started my training, one of the continuity pronouncers has announced they were leaving. So there was a vacancy. So all these things, you know, you look back and go, wow, that was quite a set of coincidences.
I don't think they are coincidences, Ruth. I think they're opportunities. You know, it's your life. And I think it's the most amazing tale, because I think particularly for at the moment, you know, for youngsters out there that don't believe that they're going to get any opportunities, you make them, and you made it by the fact that you were, you know, you were there, and you are, you know, you're a personality, and that obviously came across.
Well, I think now looking back, I think you're right. You don't understand these things always at the time, or see them clearly, do you? And you're young. Is that even that woman, Pat, in the pub, I look back now and go, why, you know, there were lots of us in the pub and we used to all chat. We all lived in the village, so we all knew each other. What did she see in me that said, do you know what, I don't think she saw me as a presenter, but just thought I had a bit of something about me, maybe, I don't know.
She saw potential, and that's basically, yeah, you know, that's what it's all about. And sometimes, yeah, and the nicest thing about it is that it's natural. You know, it wasn't somebody out there trying to be somebody that they weren't.
No.
So go on.
So I just started my training, and I was with this lovely man called Roger, who was terribly posh, Roger Ollenshaw, and he was training me. And my second day in, he went sick. He said to me, well, you're on, because we've got the news at 9:30. It's like, pardon? And some of the tapes, when I look back at some of the tapes, I look absolutely terrified. I'm young. I've got this high, squeaky, posh voice, because you had to be quite well-spoken on the television those days. And I had gone to quite a good school. So although we're not a posh family, I did speak quite well. And yes, so it all happened so, so quickly. Suddenly I was on. And then because I'd been on and been doing it, and then this other person left, boom, there I was. And suddenly I was doing it. and I loved it. I was very green. I had a lot to learn, but I had lovely people around me. When you work in a small regional station, I got a lot of help from some very kind people, and I've never forgotten that. And I like to help other people in this business, you know, so I have helped. I know I've helped other people. I've given people a leg up. You know, you put the ladder down behind you and you help them up, especially young people.
Who?
Well, I won't say his name because I don't. Yeah, because there's a young lad at the moment that works at this morning, and his grandma works in my mum's care home, and she just had a word with me one day, and she said, "I wonder if I could ask you." She said, "My grandson, he did a media course degree, and he's really struggling. You know, he's sending all these applications out, and doesn't even get a reply, and he's getting really down. He's getting really depressed about it all." And she said, "I just wondered if you had any advice, someone he could write to, who would he send a CV to?" And it was a bank holiday coming up. I think I spoke to her on the Friday, and we were working on the bank holiday Monday. And I just, you know, those things you just do. And I said, "Listen," I said, "give me his number." And I said, "and then you don't have to be involved in all this." And so I texted him and said, "Listen, I'm working on Monday. I spoke to your grandma. It's a bank holiday on Monday." I said, "It's really quiet in the building. So normally you have to ask permission to bring someone in and blah, blah." Anyway, I didn't. I just kind of said, "Come in with me." And I left him with one of the runners. Anyway, he now has just got his first researcher's job.
Oh, I love that. Could you just bear in mind that with the event industry being on its knees, I'm available any bank holiday to come in and run. I'm happy to be a researcher because things are not looking good in the party season at the moment.
But you know what? I spotted potential in him. Exactly. And I met him. I didn't know him. I didn't know him. I was doing it for his grandma because she's very kind to my mum. Right. So I thought, it's a pay it forward kind of thing, isn't it? So I brought him in. As soon as I met him, I liked him. He had a lovely quality about him. He wasn't overly confident, but he wasn't shy, and you know, he just had this lovely quality about him. And then I left him for the day with one of the runners, and he was in and out of the studio and looking around. And then they gave him a week's work experience, and in that week, so many people who didn't know that I'd introduced him were going, "Oh, have you met him? He's such a nice guy, so good." And I was like, yes. And now he's flying, and he's a lovely, lovely lad. And so that gives me joy. You know, so some people did that for me. I had good presenters who could have snubbed me and could have gone, "Who's this girl from the back room? Who's this typist that's suddenly here on the telly?" And they didn't. I mean, some did, but mostly didn't. And they all helped me. And the lovely thing in a small region in the West Country is that I would go out at lunchtime, I'd be walking around town in the market, and people would say, "Oh, you're getting much better, aren't you? Not so nervous now, are you?" So they it's almost like that region saw me, this very young green, didn't really know what she was doing, bit stumbly, made mistakes, but they stuck with it. They went, "Oh, she didn't like her." And they still hear from people in the West Country, you know, so that I'm very grateful for how I started and had that journey. It wasn't just overnight, you know, it was a long, long journey. Hello, this is Ruth Langsford, and you're listening to The Events That Made Me with my very good friend, Liz Taylor.
And then obviously we roll on, and then you meet, and I don't want to focus on Eamon a lot here because Eamon's had his turn. Today he is Mr. Langsford. Obviously meeting him was huge because you were the yin and the yang. I mean, you've been on and off screen. You've been a great double act, if I might call it that.
And actually even meeting Eamon, you know, our story is I had a friend who worked at GMTV, and I came up to see her for the weekend. When I arrived, she said, Mr. Motivator's asked us all over for dinner. And I said, what do you mean all of us? And she said, "Oh, it's me, Eamon." And I said to him, "Oh, well, actually, I can't because I've got a friend coming to stay." And he said, "Oh, bring her too." And I remember going, Eamon Holmes. And she went, "Yes, he's lovely, Eamon, you love him." So I was a bit nervous, like, oh my God, it's Eamon Holmes. I watched him on the TV, I thought he's brilliant. He was giving us a lift. So Sally said, "He's collecting us." And she said, "Oh, go and stand out on the corner because he's not coming in and he's just not quite sure where I live. So just stand on that corner, I'm locking up." So she was locking up, putting the alarm on. And so Eamon tells this story about how he met me on a street corner, which he loves to tell every time someone says, "How did you meet?" He said, "I picked her up on a street corner," gets a huge laugh every time.
Did he offer you a lot of money at the time?
Yeah, I wasn't working, Liz. But it is true. And it is true. So I was standing looking out for this car, like, oh my God, it's Eamon Holmes. Anyway, he came along and I kind of waved. I saw him and I kind of waved and he pulled round the corner. And anyway, Sally and I got in. I got in the back. And I remember, and he, what I loved about Eamon, that he was very inclusive because they worked together. They could have done lots of work chat and like, oh, did you hear about this? And because I didn't work there, he, every time they were talking, he would bring me into the conversation, very, very pointedly bring me into the conversation. And I remember at one point he turned his rear view mirror and was looking right at me. And I got a bit of a flutter. I was like, oh. And then we were chatting and he was asking me what I was doing. So I was freelance by then because we'd all lost our contract. Long story, very, you know, lots of companies at ITV lost their franchises and ours sadly was one of them. So I was freelancing and I was working on Countryfile at the time. I said, oh, I'm doing this. And I said, I've got some work on Countryfile. And he said, did you recently do an item from Rathlin Island, which is off the coast of Northern Ireland? And I said, yeah, I did actually. He said, were you standing on the back of a boat, doing a piece to camera on the back of a boat in a red jacket? And I was like, oh my God. I said, yeah, I was actually. He went, do you know, I watched that and I thought, she's very good. Why have I never seen her before? I don't know her. Because I'd obviously been in the regions. So Eamon watches. He's a master of television. He watches everything. And so I was really flattered. I was like, oh my God, Eamon Holmes noticed me on Countryfile. And that was that. And I didn't see him. I saw him on and off after that, you know, at social things with Sally. But it was 2 or 3 years after that, before we ever got together. So, you know, but he was always kind of around and he was always very complimentary about anything I was doing and always very supportive. You know, he would offer advice and he still does that. And he's very much a pay it forward person in this industry. And I meet people that I didn't know who said, oh, hi, you don't know me. And Eamon might not remember, but when I was at GMTV, he gave me some advice or he helped me do this or he helped me with my showreel. So he's very encouraging and believes in helping people come, you know, younger people coming up behind you, because we've both had that. You know, to me, we both came from regional television, so we've had quite a similar story, which is why I think we respect what each other does, because we've both come from the regions, we've both lost jobs, we've both had to freelance, you know, we've had that that kind of apprenticeship, I suppose.
I mean, he's very generous of his time, Eamon. Yeah. And but do you think that it's the respect that has kept the marriage strong? Because it's bad enough living with somebody, but working with them and actually on occasion competing with them, which I don't mean it in a negative way, but even on screen you compete with one another.
You do to a degree. I think it is a respect because we've both had a similar story. You know, he was very young when he started. There would have been people when he started going, him? What? He's only 19. There were people when I started going, what, her? She's in the typing pool. What? So we both had that slightly, you know, rocky start where people weren't, that we had, and Eamon had the similar, he probably told you, it was a similar person. He had a man who really believed in him and went, I like that boy, something about him. And he took the risk and put him on the screen. And I had David Sunderland who took the risk and put me on the screen. So we'd had both had that similar start. So I think because we understand each other's journey, because we had a similar one, we have a healthy respect of what we do. And I do smile sometimes because I think there were people, because I, you know, was a lot in regional TV, is that they thought that I got onto television when I started seeing Eamon, you know, that's why I'm here.
But actually, it was Eamon that got onto television when he started seeing you. And what makes me laugh is, because I know you both quite well, is that he's bloody terrified of you, and that really makes me... When Ruth talks about paying it forward, it resonates with me. So in this week's Air Extension, you can hear how mentoring has added value to me as a person. And it's ready for you in your podcast feed now. What I really, really want to talk to you about is now, because I actually think you're having the most exciting time now with this clothing brand. You very kindly gave me, reluctantly, but you felt that you had to.
It was not reluctantly. I
that denim jacket, which fits me perfectly and I look so cool in it. You've got Lizzie Cundy in the gear as well, and she's a size 4 and makes us all look fappy. So what did they do? Did QVC just phone you out of the blue?
Yeah. So, you know, you talk about events that changed you. I mean, it was that my agent called me one day and said, well, she came in to see me. I was doing Loose Women, and she came in to see me. We sat up in the canteen and she said, now, QVC have been in touch and would like to have a meeting with you. And I said, oh, and I like QVC. You know, I was aware of QVC. I'm not a kind of home shopping snob. And I discovered QVC when I was working for the BBC in Birmingham. And it was the first place I'd lived that had cable TV. And I was like, oh, what's this? And flicking channels. And I discovered QVC. And I remember buying this amazing bag called the Miracle Bag that, God, what didn't go in that bag was nobody's business. So I was very aware of QVC. And she was a bit like, you know, what do you think? Because it's not for everybody. And I said, absolutely, I'd love to go and talk to QVC. What about? And she said, well, they're interested in maybe doing a clothing range with you. And I was like, wow, really? So I said, of course. I practically ran to the meeting. And I was like, what is not to like about this? And actually, funny, a year before, they'd asked to see me, just come and have a coffee and a chat kind of meeting. And I went and had a coffee and a chat, and there were three or four different people, some from fashion, somebody from homeware, somebody from something else. And it was a very casual chat. They showed me around the, you know, their operation, which is amazing. And that was that. And I didn't hear anything else. But I think that meeting set off a string of events. You know, they were watching me and things, what I was doing. And obviously on TV, everybody wants to know what you're wearing that day. So you start posting, you know, today I'm wearing this from Marks and Spencer's and that from River Island. And so there was definitely an interest in what I wore. So I think that's how it started. And so I went to this meeting. Oh my God, Liz, you would laugh at this because, you know, I'm not really a business person. I don't have a business brain. I'm very enthusiastic about what I do. Anyway, so I ship up thinking I'm going to have another one of these coffee chat style meetings. I'm never, ever, ever late. And that day, there was the worst traffic in Chiswick going to QVC. And I could feel myself getting in a panic. And I was texting my agent going, I'm stuck in the worst traffic. And she's like, don't worry, don't worry. Anyway, I was probably only 5 minutes late, but I hate being late. And I thought, they'll think I'm one of those people that's always late for everything. So I remember kind of running up this last bit of road because the car can't get right to the door, a bit sweaty. So, oh, I'm here. And I walked in and it was a full boardroom of people and they were doing a full presentation. So I kind of went in, they said, here's Ruth. And I said, I'm so sorry I'm late. And I looked around this room, there's like 15 people. And they said, oh, this is so-and-so from head of merchandise. This is so-and-so from head of press. And I thought, oh my God, this is a proper, proper grown-up meeting. And sat down and they did the full presentation about QVC and how it all works. And then I remember, I thought, I haven't even got a notebook. And I remember kind of sliding my hand down into my bag while the lurks are below looking at these slides, thinking, please, a pen and a piece of paper, please, God. Fine. I looked so unprofessional. But anyway, they then turned to me and said, so tell us about you and tell us about clothes and tell us about fashion. I hadn't prepared a thing. And I said, and I just talked, I think, genuinely from the heart about what I like about clothes, what I don't, how I feel about fashion and style and my age and all that. So nothing was prepared. It's just from me. And the next day they said, we'd love to work with you. And here we are. And I'm 3 years in and I absolutely love it. It's been a really fascinating experience because, you know, who doesn't like clothes? But I've had to learn about timelines, you know, the fact I'm designing now for autumn, winter next year, you know, shapes and fabrics. And I'm very, very, very hands-on with all of it. Like you said, Liz, I do work hard.
And that's what I was going to ask you. You know, often people put their names to brands, but actually they don't have anything to do with it. Are you involved with the designs and the fabrics?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah. And I said that to them. And actually, they had no intention of it being, oh, here's a jumper. Do you like it? We'll put your name on it. They very much wanted it to be a collaboration and to actually designing things. So I don't sit and design as in draw beautiful pictures of clothes because can't draw a stick man. I'm rubbish at art. But what we do, I work with a team and I have a designer who I sit and talk. She says, right, what do you want to put in, you know, autumn, winter? I say, well, I really want to do a biker jacket, but it's got to be comfortable. It's got to be faux leather. I don't want real leather. It's got to be stretchy. The denim jacket that you mentioned, kindly, thank you. That I said, there's got to be a way of doing a really comfortable, lightweight denim jacket that's not bulky. So all the ideas come through me. I do Pinterest boards, mood boards, you know, and I say, I like this. And so, and actually, I get things from my own wardrobe and I say, look, I love this jacket if only the, you know, the sleeve was a bit longer, or I love these, this dress, but it's too short, or I like this, but it, if only it had a bit more stretch in the body. So all the design comes from my experience of clothes, shopping, not being able to get jeans that fit, that are comfortable, you know, dresses that are too short, things with no sleeves. And so it's, you know, I'm absolutely loving it. And I'm involved from the very concept. I choose zips, buttons, everything I get. They approve everything run by me. What colour zip do you want with this? And I do it with help and guidance, you know, and I do it within the parameters. I have a brand manager called Jo. I call her Brains. So she does all the kind of statistics, what's selling well, what's not so good, what do we need to push, what colour sold well in this, so should we do it next time or should we do a new colour? And it's fascinating. And they've been really...
How old is she, just as a matter of interest?
Oh, Jo's younger than me, much younger than me. I say she's in her early 30s.
So it's sort of a collaboration of, yeah, of everyone. I know that the clothing range is a huge success and I've seen why. Do you think that you will expand into other things, sort of sleepwear?
Well, I'm already expanding because I'm doing some jewellery. When I say jewellery, kind of statement pendants and things. So that's in the process at the moment. And also I'm working on some shoes. It's not very, it's very exciting. Very, very exciting. It'd be a very, very small, small range. But I am in collaboration with somebody at the moment and QVC to do some shoes. It won't be until next year.
That's fabulous. I mean, I think it's the most exciting opportunity because it's the longevity of it and also the development of it. And I decided that you should do candles and bath products. And I think we would call it From Ruth With Love, because I know you're into your candles and I know
you know what you said. I do. I love my candles. But you know what you said earlier is that, yes, you know, I've had some lucky breaks, but you call them opportunities. And I think looking back, I've taken those opportunities. And once I, you know, and I'm not the bravest person, I do question myself, you know, and Eamon, that's where Eamon's fantastic. He's not my biggest supporter. So he'll go on, you can do this. Once I say yes, I give it 100%. I work very hard on everything I do. And that's another reason it's been successful, is because I don't just sit back and let other people do it for me. I'm not lazy. I put the work in, I put the research in, you know, and I really know my stuff and I know my brand. And I think that's what's happening now, is that all the women that watch me, and I've got a really good loyal following at QVC now, is that, you know, I'm sure they might have been a little skeptical at the start or thought, I bet she doesn't really do this. They can see, I know every fabric, button, zip, the story behind each piece. And once they can see that, they trust you and they believe what you're saying.
I think, I mean, I know you'll probably think I'm bonkers, but to the listener out there, you and I share the same birthday. We're St.
Patrick's. We do.
And in many ways, we are quite similar because, yeah, we're, you know, a little bit insecure in some respects, but very committed in others. And I'm with you on that. I am exactly the same. I think that hard work hurt no one. Yeah. And if you want to get anywhere, you've got to put it in. And I admire you for that, because you have seized every opportunity. Mm. You've manipulated it to create your success, and you're self-made. And I think that it,
and actually I get really, I'm very disappointed with the people sometimes I see who've got these amazing opportunities and they're lazy. And they don't bother, you know, reading scripts or briefs or, you know, that thing. And I think someone spent a lot of time doing that and you haven't even bothered to read it, or you're late, or, and I, you know, I don't understand that mentality. And I've always worked, you know, hard at what I do. Once I do it, then once I commit to it. And I just think if something, things that I've done, and particularly QVC, I thought, if this fails, it won't be because I didn't work hard, because I couldn't live for myself. You know, if it failed and they said, well,
it's not going to fail.
It's getting bigger.
And obviously I was going to ask you, do you have any strategic plan in place? But that is obviously your plan. And I'm dead excited about the shoes. I'm a size 5. If you had your time again, because I always wanted to be a barrister, but I hated school. I did shit at school. Personal circumstances meant I didn't go to university. It wasn't an option. If you had your time again and you could do one thing, is there anything? I know that you wouldn't change what you have now, but is there anything that you wished you would have done?
Yeah, I do wish I'd worked harder at school just for my own personal general knowledge. So I don't, you know, I don't regret anything. I don't regret not going to university. I wasn't, in our day, there were not so many universities and you had to be a grade A student in everything to go to university. And I absolutely wasn't that, but I had no desire. I'd never look back and say, oh, I'd love to have gone to uni. I didn't. And I couldn't wait to get out to work and I couldn't wait to earn money. I just wanted to earn money. I wanted to earn money, have my own place, buy clothes. And, you know, and I was happy with that. But it, as like, you know, in later life, I thank God for Google because my general knowledge is really bad. So it's when things come up, I just Google everything. So I'm teaching myself all the time and through Jack at school. But there was lots of things I just wish I had, because I went to a very good school. You know, I had a very good education in a lot of ways. But academically, if something bores me, I can't stick with it. And so I just didn't stick with stuff. And I kind of wish if I had my time again, I'd have just worked a bit harder at school. And I'd like to have had better qualifications, just for my own personal pride.
Well, Ruth Langsford, we, the British public, are delighted that you actually never went to university, because we love waking up to you. We love having lunch with you. And now we are all dressed like you. In fact, there are a million Stepford wives out there that are all Ruth Langsford lookalikes. Thank you for getting up on Sunday morning.
I'd only do that for you on a Sunday morning.
I never doubted that my interview with Ruth would be amazing. She's full of energy. She's very driven. We're on the same page. And it just reinforces why I have so much respect for her. And I don't say that about a lot of people. Listen to the bonus air extension that goes along with this episode. I'll share with you why giving back is so fulfilling. You can find that in your podcast feed now. Don't forget, if you're enjoying the events that made me, share it with a friend and rate and review and subscribe wherever you're listening. To find out more about how you and I can work together, look for @LizTaylorConsultancy on social media or go to my website, liz-taylor-consulting.co.uk. Join me again on the 23rd of December, where I sit down and chat with another one of my amazing guests. See you then.